Sarah, and thanks for listening to the Adulting is Easy podcast, where we make adulting easier by making money easier. This is your host, Lauren, and I'm joined today by Dan, a real estate investor based out of Chicago, running a humble portfolio of five doors. He also hosts the Landlord Horror Stories podcast. This is a show that combines storytelling, history, and real estate. Currently, Dan is working on season two of that show. Thanks for joining me, Dan.
Lauren, thank you so much for having me on. I'm sitting in here in my closet in snowy, snowy Chicago. It's kind of fun. Out here in Chicago, we got like 6 inches of snow on the ground, and you're in sunny Florida. So
yeah,
one of us is winning.
Certainly no snow. But talk to me in July and you'll be winning then.
Yeah, exactly right.
So our goal for today is to make adulting easier for listeners by discussing a personal finance topic, since managing money is a big part of adulting. Today, Dan, we're going to talk about how to overcome some of these real estate horror stories. But first, I'd like to get into you as an investor first. So can you tell us how and why you got into real estate investing?
Sure. So I went to college for finance because I was really fascinated, and I guess I've always been fascinated about money, right? Like, how do you make money? How do you build wealth? And I was really disappointed in middle school and high school. Nobody ever told me like, hey, students, this is how you make money. This is how you're able to build wealth. It was always just, you know, roundabout ways. Oh, you know, you go to school, you get a degree, and then you make money. And then somewhere along the line, you're able to retire and all that good stuff. Yeah. So I went to college for finance, was disappointed because it was all equations and it was all the stuff that wasn't really exactly like, hey, this is how you make money, right? There is no course on real estate investing, at least at the University of Illinois at Chicago, which is my alma mater. So I was just like, hey, you know what? I'm going to graduate. I'll go and get the best job possible. I'll be in sales because I heard that you can make some money in sales, which in fact is, I know that you're also have a sales background. You can make a lot of money in sales. Keeping it is kind of a little bit of a trick sometimes.
Sure.
But the first job that I got out of college was a company called Outcome Health. And it was like this big, shiny unicorn startup here in Chicago. They did really cool technology in the healthcare space. And I came in as an entry-level sales guy. I was setting up meetings with doctors and people who are running these clinics. And I was doing really well. And I'm like, I could make some good money at this company. Like, I'm looking at top-tier sales guys who are making $300,000-$400,000 a year.
Wow.
I wasn't making anywhere near that. I was probably making $50,000, you know, if I was hitting my metrics. So I was there for a couple months doing well, kind of budding along. And all of a sudden, the entire sales team got pulled into a conference room. And our sales manager came in and said, hey, just so you know, there's going to be some fake news from the Wall Street Journal about us. But don't worry, it is all fake news. It's none of it's true. But here's the thing, you can't talk to any reporters. And, you know, she was maybe, I don't know, 29, 30 years old. And then one of the seasoned sales guys was probably, you know, 29, 30 at the, raised his hand and said, what does a reporter look like? You know, does he have like the little hat, the bowler hat with like the little paper sticking out that says press in it? And she's just like, I don't know what to tell you. We just can't talk about this. And so what ended up happening over the next couple months was article after article from all these, very well-respected financial news outlets came out saying that the executives were cooking the books, stealing money, lying to clients, advertisers that we were working with, investors. One of those investors is actually the current governor, J.B. Pritzker of Illinois, which is kind of fun.
Wow.
And so what I got to see is the entire company fell apart. And then these sales guys who are making all this money had to basically come to this realization like, hey, I've had this lifestyle. I've been making all this money, but I now need to go find another sales job, which is not easy to do. It's not easy to find like a really good sales job out there while also having the stain of working for a fraudulent company all over the news. And so I was young, you know, right out of college. This whole process kind of played out over the course of about 6 or 7 months. And I realized like, hey, I can't depend on somebody else. I can't depend on a W-2, on an employer. I can't rely on somebody else doing their job who I might have never have met, right, outside of maybe like sharing a bathroom stall with them. That sounds kind of weird. But doing their job, right, to put food on the table. And so that took me down this journey about 7 years ago, basically being like, how do I build wealth on my terms that is durable to the point where I don't need to rely on anybody else? That I don't need to rely on an employer. on some executive, on some investor, right? And that led me down the path to real estate. And so, like you said in the intro, over the last 7 years, I was able to build a humble portfolio of five doors, and I'm currently living in a house hack that I recently moved into. So that's kind of my origin story.
That is gut-wrenching. You're a good storyteller. I can see why you have the Landlord Horror Stories podcast. But it's so interesting. And there's that quote that's out there that basically means, like, you're wise if you can learn from other people and you don't have to make the mistakes that they did. So you were able to look at these salespeople and not want to make that mistake where you're reliant on an employer or you're reliant on a certain salary for your certain lifestyle that can be ripped away from you. So I just want to give you some kudos there, especially being that young. I don't think that is very easy to do. So that explains why you want to make money on your own terms and not be reliant on somebody else. But that doesn't explain why it was real estate.
That's a great question. And during that whole process, you know, I did a lot of research on just different investing methods. And I think that's kind of a rabbit hole that people kind of fall down into when they first kind of get into it. Like, oh man, I just discovered this cool new term, financial independence or FIRE, right? I'm going to go full bore into it. And then you start seeing like these scammy ads on social media and on your YouTube about, you know, crypto and, you know, short-term rentals and all this stuff out there that kind of like all the shiny stuff. And real estate stuck out to me because of the four pillars, right? Like, there's cash flow every single month. The price of real estate tends to go up. There's tax deductions. But what really, really sold me is the fourth one, which is the loan pay down. And I kind of came to this realization, like, hey, I could buy a property that's maybe not great, but somebody else is paying down that loan every single month. And I would never want to do it. I never want to be in that situation, and I would never recommend it. But you hold on to a property long enough and you have enough of that loan paid off and then you sell it, odds are you're going to make some money. And so like once that kind of is sunk in, it's just like, wow, real estate, that's a lot better than investing in something that the best case, like the only case scenario, right, is the price of Bitcoin goes up or the price of Coca-Cola goes up.
Yeah. I mean, unless we're talking about dividends, but even then, I mean, a good dividend yield is like 2%. And you should be getting more than that on your real estate. So that makes a lot of sense. And I also am going to give you some kudos here. This is like Dan appreciation hour here. But a lot of people get into the financial independence rabbit hole and they never sort of come back out. They never act. They never take action. They're like, should I buy individual stocks? If so, should I buy value stocks or should I buy growth stocks? Should I buy blue chip stocks? Should I buy dividend stocks? And then they're like, okay, well, oh, but there's index funds. But should I buy this index fund? Should I buy this index fund? What about bonds? And then real estate, should I do wholesaling? Should I flip? Should I do long-term rentals? Should I short-term rentals? And then there's all of the crypto, which has come out in the last few years. And you're like, how do you narrow it down? So the fact that you were able to take in all of that information and make a decision to go with not only real estate, but I believe long-term rentals, right?
Long-term rentals, correct. And, you know, I kind of breezed past it, but it was a 3-year journey before I was able to buy my first rental. Analysis paralysis, a little bit on it. I mean, I had chosen my lane, right? I'm going into real estate. I'm going into long-term rentals. That is a lane that I'm going down. And I'd even say, hey, I'm going to go into Milwaukee. For a number of reasons that maybe we could get into, but Milwaukee's a big market. Like you go into any city, there's different, like, you know, neighborhoods, micro neighborhoods, this block versus that block. And so I remember having this spreadsheet and this idea like, oh, I'm just going to go through every single zip code in Milwaukee and I will do an analysis on every single zip code, on schools, on crime, on employment opportunities and all this stuff. And like, I got 50 zip codes or whatever in, and I'm like, the data that I'm looking at, I don't know how reputable it is. I was like going through all these different websites. And I was just like, this is so stupid. Right. So, and I came into a decision like, I'm actually in a situation where I am paralyzed by analysis. And I ended up taking a step back. And how I got out of that is by networking with people who operate in the market and having them basically say, these are the areas that you should operate in. So, you know, it took 3 years before I was able to buy that first property. It was not a quick process. I had to learn a lot. And I think that's what people kind of need to realize when they first get into this whole financial independence realm, that it is a marathon. It is not a sprint. And everybody is selling courses and workbooks and coaching on how to sprint. And oftentimes, if you go out there and you sprint and you're able to build up a huge portfolio right in 6 months, how strong of a foundation have you really built?
Right.
So
you have five doors. What is the makeup of that portfolio?
I've got a duplex I'm living in right now, which is my house hack. I've got a single family in Milwaukee. And then I have three townhouse condos in Milwaukee as well. All the properties are in Milwaukee are in this like little space. They're all in about the same zip code. And you know, the townhouse condos, they're affordable. I think that I spent between like $50,000 and $75,000 on them, you know, per property. And I found that they've been a great little niche because they're affordable to get into. They rented the same, like a single family, because it's the same size, right? It's a three bedroom, four bedroom, two and a half, two bath property. You don't have people living above or below you. You're sharing walls with people. So it kind of lives like a single family. So it got the same rent. But if you're living in that market, right, do you really want to share walls, right? If you're going to go out and buy, you're going to go out and buy a single family for not that much more money if you're looking at a 30-year loan, right? Like I could buy a $75,000 property, or I could buy my own, you know, single family home for $150,000, right? For what, maybe 75, 100 bucks more a month. Like most people are going to do that. And then from the investor side of it, investors don't want to invest in anything with an HOA, right? Like,
no.
Who wants to invest in a property and then have an HOA board on top of you? So the whole learning curve with those, and not to dwell too much on them, was I had to go out and find HOA boards I really wanted to work that I wanted to work with, that were owned, that had that, you know, were strong, that were good, that weren't overbearing. The risk there is that HOAs can change at any time. But so far, so good. And I kind of dwell on that because I went into the market and I bought that single family house. I spent like $99,000 on it and it was great. And I'm like, okay, this next property, I'm going to have to probably wait another year or two to be able to save up the $20,000 or $30,000. And then all of a sudden I found out these townhouse condos and I'm like, wow, this is a lot more affordable. And I was able to buy, you know, two more properties by the end of that first year. So it just goes into show, you go into the market, you study the market, you do the work. And all of a sudden you start finding these alleyways to help you blow up your portfolio.
Why did you pick Milwaukee versus Chicago, even though you live in Chicago?
It's the dumbest reason. Do you want to hear? Do you really want to know?
We can, we'll cut this out if it's really dumb. Go ahead.
No. Okay. So I was with a friend from college who is not a financial expert, who is not, you know, he's the furthest thing from being financially responsible. And I was talking to him early in my journey, right? And this probably was the last time I even saw him. And I was like, I'm thinking of getting into real estate. And he was like, oh, you should buy houses in Milwaukee. And I said, Milwaukee? Why? And he said, because they're cheap, because you can buy cheap houses there. He'd never been to Milwaukee. He's not a real estate investor. He just said, Milwaukee can buy cheap houses. So I kept that in the back of my brain. Right, like, hey, I can buy cheap houses in Milwaukee. So all this time, all the books, all the podcasts, the videos I was watching, I just had in the back of my head, like, yeah, I'll use this, you know, Brandon Turner's four square method for evaluating a property for when I buy my first house in Milwaukee. And without a whole lot of thought into it. And then when it got to the time, like I got closer to being able to pull the trigger, I started doing more research. I'm like, you can buy houses that are cheap in Milwaukee. It does have a strong renter base. It does have a strong price to rent ratio. And it's like, hey, this is checking a lot of boxes. And then lo and behold, I've got people that I know who actually know people who invest in Milwaukee. So kind of, it's like all the things kind of fell into place. And I tell it to some people and it's a very dumb way of picking a market. But I think it just goes to show that you don't need to spend months and months and months evaluating a market, right? Just pick a market. Any market that you pick, you will find properties that will cash flow. It might not be downtown Manhattan. You might have to go out into Long Island. You might have to go out 45 minutes, but you can find deals that work.
So I don't think that's dumb. And you did the pressure testing. It wasn't like somebody was like, hey, you should buy Milwaukee. And then you like made an offer. So you know, I wouldn't beat yourself up over that. So this is going to be my last question, I guess, about like your journey. And then we'll transition to the podcast a little bit. But What are your goals for your portfolio? You're at five. Like, where do you want to take this?
I don't really have an end goal in general, like a unit count. I think that's kind of dumb. Just because I want to keep on buying. I want to keep on building the portfolio. My goal has not changed to build. We mentioned Grant Cardone earlier, I believe. And he has a term, you know, I want to build indestructible wealth. I want to build wealth that's indestructible, that nobody can take from me, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, that's my goal, right? Like my experience early on in my professional career of being, you know, at a situation that's great, going to make all this money, all this perceived security, and then having it ripped away. It's like, I view real estate as a way to protect myself from a situation like that. So I'm just going to keep on buying properties. I want to buy properties that cash flow well, 12%+ cash on cash return. I want to have a strong emergency fund, you know, to the point that I don't need to rely on an employer, that I don't need to rely on somebody else.
I love that. And I think that's great. That's a good enough goal for the record, everyone. So I have this idea in my head, this story in my head, if you will, Dan, that you had a landlord horror story and that's why you started the podcast. Did that happen? Or, how did we get to this point?
No, not even close. It's kind of funny. In building out this show, I was expecting that everybody was going to have a horror story, that everybody was going to have this juicy, nightmare fueled like story. Because when you first get into real estate, like everybody around you, that's all that they tell you, right? You go into real estate, you start telling people, I'm going to do real estate. And they're like, oh, we're going to have the plumbing's going to back up at 3 o'clock. Your basement's going to fill with sewage.
That's the horror story. Usually it's like, you're going to have to fix a toilet at 2 a.m., which for the record, mm-hmm. it's not much of a horror story, but sorry, I didn't mean
exactly.
To
and it's a situation where it's, those are the outliers, right? It's a one in a million for a reason. They do happen. And they happen to people who are operating at huge scale, but you know, it doesn't happen every single day.
Yeah.
So no, I did not have a landlord horror story. I built the show because I didn't find anything that really kind of covered my three, you know, genres of content that I love. I love history. I love real estate. I love true crime. And it's like, I wanted to build a show that kind of molds all of them together because I really love that content and I really love building the show. It is not easy. It's very complex and it takes a pound of flesh, but I really love all the content that kind of goes into it. So that's why I built it. It's not because I had like a crazy landlord horror story of my own, because I love hearing other horror stories.
I love true crime too. So does Alan. So do any stories from the show stick out to you as we're sitting here?
I knew you were going to ask me that. So I figured I'd bring one. One story coming from episode 9. Told by a landlord named Dom Casisa. He is a New York City ex high-rise construction worker. He ripped up his back real bad on the job to the point where he wasn't able to work anymore. But he got a good amount of money and he's like, I'm going to take this money and I'm going to go out there. I'm going to go into real estate and I'm going to use this to replace my W-2, right? Because I can't hang, I can't be a steel worker in Midtown Manhattan anymore. And so he started doing virtual flips in Orlando, Florida, not too far from you. He did well in a couple deals. The last deal, he kind of got burned. I think he said he broke even, so he didn't lose all that much money. But he's like, flipping is not the best for me. I'm going to go into long-term rentals. So he found a 10-unit building in Reading, Pennsylvania, which is actually the inspiration for Reading Railroad and Monopoly. Yep. So I think we were talking, it's just like, man, the stars aligned, right? Like, buying real estate in Reading, Pennsylvania. You can't get much better than that. So this 10-unit was owned by a total slumlord. I think he was a doctor, I want to say. Oh. And he bought this 10-unit, you know, just as part of an investment. And he did not care about it at all. The units were absolutely trashed out. Sold it for a really just cheap number. So Dom was able to get a pretty good deal on it. And the day after closing, he was given an arrest warrant for one of his residents from actually the old landlord. He got the arrest warrant. And so Dom was like, all right, well, I'm going to have to redo that unit anyway. So I guess, you know, great. I got some vacancy I can kind of work with. The police came in. The tenant was not cooperative. The police knocked down the door, rested the guy, hauled him out. Dom and his contractor came in. They started working on the unit, ripping stuff out. Again, totally just trashed out unit. And then after a couple of days, Dom got a call from his contractor and said, "Hey, Dom, the key's not working. You know, I need to change out the key. You know, the key's not working." And then he's like, "Really? You know, you sure about that?" And the contractor's like, "You know what? Actually, the lock is moving. Like, the key's got some give to it." Like, and then they're quiet. And he's like, "Dom, I think there's somebody in here."
They're holding the door. Oh my God.
Dom, it's a little bit worse than that. The Dom came out, the police came, and the police officer is like, "Hey man, I don't have like legal jurisdiction to kick in the door for you, but if you kick in, then maybe I could go in, you know," wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah. So Dom kicked in his own door
that he had just fixed.
That he had just fixed, right? So the same door kicked in over the course of like, you know, twice over like a week or whatever. They go in, arrest the guy, and it turned out that that resident had snuck in through the fire escape, broke back into the old unit that he had. There was, you know, equipment there. So he took a drill, took some screws, screwed the door in, right, to lock it, and was just like hanging out there, right, until he got hauled off to jail. And Dom was just like, that was kind of my initiation to this property, which was really pretty brutal. Another kind of little tidbit from that story, from that same 10 unit, was that there was this unit within it that had really bad water damage in the kitchen. And the cabinets got so waterlogged that the old landlord, instead of, you know, doing the responsible thing and ripping them out and kind of addressing the problem, he just went and he screwed the cabinet doors shut. So that way, you know, you couldn't realize just how nasty and waterlogged and moldy the inside of the cabinet was. You just had one less cabinet. And so there were only a handful of cabinet doors actually opened in that kitchen. And so Dom just said, you know, that property, it was like putting Band-Aids over bullet wounds, which is what we used actually for the title of the episode. But he went through, did repaired all the units, was able to bump up the rent, and it's actually a pretty good cash flowing property for him. But man, did he have to work for that cash flow?
Well, you mentioned the four pillars of real estate. There's all these different ways to make money in real estate between those four pillars, but also there's all these different strategies. And in my opinion, especially if you're using leverage and you're in an appreciating environment, which we have been for a long time, and I anticipate, I think you can outdo the stock market, right? But there's no reason. There's more risk, there's more reward, right?
Yeah, you run into situations like that. And people, when they first get into real estate, and I'm guilty of this, you know, full disclosure, is you think it's a spreadsheet business, right? You buy this property, this is the yield that you will get. And then you forget that it's really a hospitality business. You are providing safe shelter. People who are coming in out of that property, whether they're renting it, maybe they're a straw tenant and they're not actually the person who signed the lease on that property. It's always kind of crazy when your tenant has tenants. Or just, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, spouses, children, right? Like, there's a ton of variables that go into this business that newbie people just sometimes don't fully appreciate. You can make a lot of money. There's just some risk that's associated.
And I've said this before, probably my listeners are getting annoyed at hearing this, but when I got into real estate, especially in this property that I'm sitting in, which is now, it's 123 years old. It was 119 when I bought it. And I knew
is
I was going to make
the first house ever made in Florida. It's ancient for Florida.
I know, it's crazy, right? It's definitely older than this county, I think. But I knew I was going to make changes to this house and this property. I didn't know how much this was going to change me. And your handle on Twitter is Resilient REI, Resilient Real Estate Investing. And that's always stuck out to me because real estate has made me a more confident, resilient person. And I have been on your show. I had a horror story that I showed there that I talked about a squatter. I have another one for you that I'll share later. But that said, it's all been worth it. And I am a better, more entrepreneurial, more resilient human being than I was before I started all this.
Yeah. You know, you go into it and you learn a bunch of skills, DIY skills, if you're self-managing. I mean, when I went and bought this duplex, right? All of my properties up until buying this unit have been in Milwaukee, and I've been able to rely on contractors, property managers. But buying this, And, you know, the unit that I'm living in was not move-in ready. It had not seen a day of love since like the 1990s. It was gross.
Ew.
So going in, doing some of the work myself, working with contractors and handymen to kind of help bring this unit to a position where it could be moved into, you know, was a very unique and fun experience. And I agree. I think it changed me as well. I feel a lot more confident because it's one thing to be able to be like, hey, Mr. Contractor in Milwaukee, go out, do the work. Here's the money. You know, we're adding a bedroom in the basement or whatever the case might be. It's very different to be like, okay, this kitchen right here in front of me, everything needs to go.
What have you learned from the podcast episodes and interviewing these landlords?
You know, I've learned that in building out these shows, and we mentioned it a little bit before, I was under the assumption that, and even kind of going into it, that there's going to be a lot of just really nasty horror stories. And there really haven't been. You know, people who have huge portfolios, I've reached out to like, man, you're on Twitter, you've got 75 doors, you've got 150 doors, you must have a crazy landlord horror story that we could have on the show. And the number of times I've been told, well, this one guy didn't pay me rent for a couple months and that really sucked. It's like, yeah, I can't have that on. I can't have that on. Or even, yeah, we had a toilet that overflowed and we had to do some work in the bathroom. It's just like, yeah, I can't have that either.
That's like a bad dream, not a horror story. Yeah. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And maybe it's just because like the lens that I view everything for, like a story has to be good. It has to be a great narrative over 10, 15, 20 minutes. And that's just not it. It's really hard to find a really good, juicy, crazy, you know, landlord horror story. And maybe it's just a situation where those stories are so, you know, they resonate so well. That's what people kind of latch onto who aren't in the industry. And they're like, oh, I would never want to have a situation like that. I would never want to have to kick in my own door twice. Right. So I'm just going to have that in the back of my head. Like, I don't want to be a landlord because of that. And then anybody who wants to become a landlord and get into real estate, you know, I'll make sure to remind them of that. And then, you know, and there's also kind of the scale of it too, where people be like, oh yeah, man, I've got this crazy, awful landlord horror story. It's going to be great for your show. This one guy didn't pay me rent for 3 months. And then he smeared feces all over the walls. And it's like, even that, it's not that's bad for you for sure, but it's not like at that level. So I think that what I'm getting at is that the crazy show episodes that I feature on my show are so random, so one in a million, that, you know, it's just, it's not as bad as maybe some people think it is.
Is that what everybody says? Like, is there anybody that you've interviewed is like, and that's when I quit being a landlord?
Nope. I even had a situation, I got close to it once. At the end of each one of my episodes, I say, has real estate been a net negative or net positive for you financially? Everybody has said net positive. I got close one time, and it was with the host of The Price of Avocado Toast, Justin Brown Woods, yeah, where he went, bought a property and just got absolutely burned, lost money. And it was his first deal. And he said, you know, I want to say it was a net negative because I lost all this money, but I learned so much and I'm not done. I will buy more real estate and I'm not going to make the same mistake. So I am going to say it's a net positive.
Yeah. I was talking to him about all that at FinCon. That's pretty funny. So Dan, is there anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
Seasons 2, it's in the works. It is going to be a lot more involved on my end. So I'm taking my time with it. We're going to have more of a YouTube element to it, to be able to bring these stories to life. Cause that's my goal, right? To bring these stories to life. And at the end of every episode, we kind of take a deep dive into how these situations were resolved. I think it's really important for people out there. Bad things do happen in real estate. Let's not pretend that they don't, but every problem does have a solution.
I'll put a link to the show in the show notes. Do you want to let people know how else they can follow you and get in touch with you?
Sure. I'm very active on Twitter. You can search Landlord Horror Stories. My handle is also Resilient REI. So there is a little bit of a mix up there, but they all go to the same person. It's me. I'm the guy with the burning house.
It's me. I'm the guy. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Adulting Is Easy, Instagram at Adulting Is Easy Real, YouTube at Adulting Is Easy. If you like this episode, you'll also like episode 123 when you house hack and it has mold, but you still make money. Thanks again for listening, everybody. Hopefully, Dan and I have made adulting a little easier for you.